Welcome, welcome, welcome to Tide 45. Ooh, Hugh Blaines, pianist, composer, singer, Hugh Blaines, Jesus Christ. I hate how great he is on the piano, organ, keyboard, I really do. When I start to think in a populist kind of way, we've dumbed down things too much, I blare the Blaines and know that everything is going to be okay. Oh yeah, yeah. And in any showboating that gets me hard, it's as Davis said so eloquently, it's the notes he doesn't play which makes him so goddamn tasty. And his voice, what is it? Jazz? Pop? Musical? Theater? Operatic? Well, it's all of the above and more! All the way from the Netherlands, give it up for Hugh Blaines!
Hoi hoi, goedemorgen.
I gotta pretend nice like I know what that means.
Just good morning. Even though it's actually after 12, which they say goedemiddag. Goedemiddag, man.
So you've got a handle on it? The old vocabulary?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. I did a driving lesson yesterday and she was blaring out instructions. I've been driving for 20 years, but here you have to get a separate license. And she's blaring out instructions to me, in Dutch.
Oh my God.
Pretty intense. Like I've got a whole new way of doing the clutch, which I never, like I've got my styles and she's completely erasing it. And first of all, it's an honor to be here to talk to you, man, because I remember some gigs we did and
that's right.
And obviously, I've got great respect for the Mendoza dynasty,
yes.
Kingdom, whatever you want to call it.
There's a couple, man.
I'd love to know more about the Mendoza family because, your sister's in the Moulin Rouge right now. And
she is. Yeah.
And
on Broadway.
And, if your brother's a great keys player in his own right as well.
He is, man. Playing with the greats.
Francisco Tavares and all these kind of guys. And
yeah, man.
Do you ever get down there to those gospel sessions that they do over there in the West? Where is that place again? Sedan?
Too much of an atheist in me to
get to. But I'm an atheist. I'm an atheist gospel musician as well, dude.
I know you are, dude. But it's true. You get for the music and those gospel harmonies and rhythms and things like that, which can only be produced in such a place, is it's cool. You know what I mean? But I used to be a born-again Christian, so it kind of freaks me out because I've gone completely the other way. So I think maybe it's a bit triggering for me back when I used to carry a Bible.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I was chatting to a friend of mine who just got out of I won't mention any names.
That's
you
right.
know, a bit Fargo. I won't mention the names, but the story's true, this guy, he's just come out of the Seventh-day Adventist church. And so he's got to find a new life because when you leave that church, you leave your wife who's Seventh Day, you leave your parents who's Seventh Day, brother, sister, Seventh Day.
Yeah.
And this is a religion that believes that the end of the world is coming soon. They believe that everyone else who's not Seventh Day, you must not only pity them, but they're kind of, you can read about it yourself.
Well, that's what it was like in Born Again Christian Church. There's everyone's going to hell except for you because you got the good news. And,
I mean, there was a good old sermon about circumcision the other day. So that was fun because I sing on
Sundays.
That's
the only good thing I got out of it was the circumcision because I like the way my penis looks. I'm happy with that. I like the cut. Yeah. And
I guess it's like a haircut, I guess. I sing there on Sundays and, I find it good to go into these places that ordinarily you wouldn't go to because I find myself in Jewish situations. I find myself in Catholic, I play organ on Wednesdays at this Catholic church, this big organ. I go in there on Sundays and sing in the choir and do some soloist work there. And I find it great. And one thing about being a musician is that you just get to find yourselves in these little clubs, you know, like if I'm doing a wedding and then suddenly it's like this, you know, this Turkish sect, you know, or whatever. And then suddenly I'm the musician at this wedding, you know, and I see all these different corners of the world. So
do you remember when we did the wedding in that big fucking teepee?
Yeah. I mean, I remember that to this day because we were in, you know, some suburb like the invention of the porno suburb. Yeah. I think Vermont or something, yeah. You know, very classic Vermont, very hedonistic suburb that it is. and I think we're somewhere like there. I think we're at Blackburn. We're in Neighborsville anyway, somewhere around where they film Neighbors. And right. Anyway, there's this big teepee with the music, and it's actually a pretty good vibe, suburban vibe. The generator's on.
Yeah.
And there's Darius. And actually, it's the first time it's one of the first times I met you. I think I met you a couple of times before that. And like, I'm a singer as well. And then, you know, you're a singer. And there was also maybe another singer there as well. I can't remember who, maybe Riley Williams or someone.
Yeah, there was someone remember. Because was it White Tree or
why can't I remember? Baker Brothers? It was White a White. Or... No, it was a White. It was a White Tree. And I just, one thing about the White Tree in the early days, this wedding company run by a good friend of mine, James Tubble, who's from my old band, The Melodics.
Mm.
White Tree, when it first started, it was a real new approach to weddings. You know, there was rappers, there was all kinds of things, and it had a really nice kind of modern atmosphere. So then, you know, the way you conduct yourself in those first, in those chilled sets, you know, we played some background music while people are like eating and stuff, and you were just going for it. And I was like, this guy's like,
was it going too hard?
No. I mean, I think that's the beauty of it though. Cause I'd done so many weddings. I was kind of conditioned to go, well, cricket umpire style, you know, as long as no one notices me, I'm doing a good job.
Oh,
you know?
Right. Yeah.
That kind of style. And you're doing it, you know, you're doing the take, you know, you're doing the winning take on like at the Brooklyn Tabernacle, you know, you're doing a big, outros of like Georgia on My Mind and whatever. And it was like, we're playing it for like 6 minutes, this 1-4 progression.
Yes.
And you were just going nuts. And I was like, this is cool. You know, I'm actually feeling the vibes here.
Yeah. You got
and,
it.
And
dude.
You know, yeah. And I was just like, this guy's something, you know? And then that went on throughout the night. And then the party just got, you know, heavier and heavier. And then you started just going, I'm just going to stop singing and just start dancing with the crowd. And then just
hey man, if you pay me, you get a show. That's a guarantee. You know what I mean? And if we're getting wedding money, so I'm going to bring it. Oh, thank you, man. I appreciate that.
I was just really impressed. It taught me a lot of things about my own insecurities, especially in those environments, you know. Of course, it's easy to kind of do that when everyone's going nuts for you and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, just to really feel the vibe, and yeah, I loved your voice as well.
I appreciate that, man, and right back at you. But I think with those things, I think the more, and there can be like a laid back approach, especially if it's you know, I've done weddings where I kind of just go more into the bossa vibe of things because that's the outlay. But this was a big party and a teepee, and people were vibing, so I went in that direction as the band did, but. There's nothing worse.
I disagree, man. This is the beauty of it. This is the beauty of that night. Is you went and picked up 150, well, let's say boring people, just to make it simple.
Yeah.
And just drag them up into this yeah mode. And you did that, man. It wasn't already the vibe. No.
I won't accept that.
No, I won't accept that.
And I appreciate that. But it's, yeah, so if there's an opportunity for that, I'll bring it. But it's
My point is to you.
You reckon there's
always
an opportunity.
I'm not sure you're realizing. I'm saying that you are so good that you will bring the opportunity even if there's no opportunity. And that was really inspiring.
Well, because I've played with people, and this often happens at weddings, especially with jazzers. I find that they'll go half-mast, right? And it'll just be this, and then it becomes this fucking tedious thing. And I just look at it like what I always do if there's that mindset there is then I just treat it like a jam because I can't fucking do that thing where people are just half playing. And I find it really fucking annoying, especially when up the front and you're singing and people aren't giving you those vibes. And it works for every kind of player, right? But if someone's like halfing it, I'm like, all right, now we're going to really push you guys. And no one was doing that, yep. But it just there was a thing, you know, sometimes with those because it's thrown together bands and they're really good players. And I love out of all of those situations, White Tree's the best at it because they pick the right players. And especially during that time, I think it was people kind of knew each other. There was more of a vibe. It wasn't as big, so people were tighter. But yeah, I just think you just got to bring it, man, because you know it's not 9 till 5. It's not that I'm coming in here again. I think you know for the hours that we gig, just fucking bring it.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. I guess there's I completely agree. I think bring it. You know, bring it from the word go and be on and I think that's what I expect about everyone here that I play with as well in the Netherlands. Like
what do you do there, man?
Bring it.
How did you are you teaching there? Are you playing? I've gone through a lot of your Instagram stuff and some of it's really fucking interesting, but oh man, it's so nice to hear someone again. You know, I just I hear people grab chords on the piano and because they're all, you know, singer-songwriters and things like that. But they don't necessarily know how to play the piano. They'll just hold that chord, right? And sometimes and there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not taking away from that. Sometimes that's all you need to do. But to hear someone like yourself that has that background and has probably listened to, you know, Thelonious, Oscar Peterson, Errol Gardner, Bill Evans, and it comes through and you've got your own style as well, is that there's just this thing and it just takes me back to that kind of romantic era and playing, you know, playing around the melodic line and then also doing your own thing, but it never gets, for me, too heavy where it's avant-garde jazz. But it's your playing's amazing, man, and I've always fucking liked it. But and also your energy and your voice we will get to later, but I just I dig your playing, man. I really dig it.
Well, one thing I did when I first moved here was study masters. So after 15 years since finishing at Monash University, went into masters here and learnt off some jazz greats. Actually, there's the Thelonious Monk piano competition in America, and Marcus Roberts, a great piano player, won the 1987 one, and the guy who came second was my teacher of that. And you know, the judge was like Hank Jones or you know, so, like it's a really good competition. So I learned some great tricks of the trade from Rob van Barvel and Wolford Brederode, and he's signed to ECM. So there's some good guys who teach up here in Den Haag. And so I was lucky enough to learn some great things that I'm still working on to this day.
My dad met Thelonious, right? And he was playing at the Hilton doing my dad used to do the floor shows, Hilton or the Hyatt, I can't remember, but in Hong Kong. And Thelonious Monk was one of the guys. He was that was the show, and so my dad got to play in front of him and play with him. And my dad.
What year was this?
Oh, I don't know, in the 60s, right? Maybe early 70s. And yeah, man. But my dad was so fresh from the Philippines, you know, plucked right from the fucking rice paddies, but could play jazz piano weirdly, right? And Thelonious nice. Goes, hey man, can you get us some grass? And my dad's like, sure. And he goes to his band members. He had no fucking idea. He's like, I don't know why, but he keeps asking for grass. Do I just go to the lawn or what? He's like, yeah, you idiot. He was so green, man, as green as the weed.
You know, it's funny how you do meet some of these characters, and all they want is to score some things off you. There's a
little baggy.
There's a couple of great Israeli musicians. Again, I won't mention any names, but
sure,
hanging out with us because I lived with someone who was kind of a, I wouldn't even say he was a dealer. He was just a giver, really. And again, no names.
I love those guys.
And yeah, and so you know, and so this guy, these guys would come and play in our lounge room, and. You know, And I was like, why do they want to play with us? And Yeah, because we got all this, we're giving away all this grass, as Thelonious Monk would say. Thelonious Monk. Yeah, but I think Thelonious Monk, you've got to realize when you mention about these keys and all this stuff and, you know, what you're trying to do as a modern piano player, you've got to realize that these guys are originals.
Yeah.
They're fighting back against every idiot that's saying, no, that's not the way you're meant to play. Because every time you're an original, you are fighting back. We listen to it and go now, oh, that's the way people play today. So that's, but we forget that it actually is such bravery to be someone like Thelonious Monk and all these guys. I mean, everyone was playing piano, classical, and the jazz thing was, you couldn't learn it off. You know, someone would just be doing it, you know, and that's quite fascinating. So what I try and do with my own practice is to really spend some time thinking about and practicing my own ideas.
Yes.
Writing your own music helps with that a lot. So I also compose exercises. Simon Maven from Hiatus Coyote sends me all these weird exercises all the time.
Oh, really?
He doesn't even say hello. He just there's an attachment of this Brahms etude or something. He's like, oh yeah, try this, mate. Oh yeah. He's like,
no. Did you get that new album? Then, what'd you think?
Oh yeah, you know, pioneers.
Yeah,
you know, these guys. You know, these guys are fighting against, you know, against what is convention? Because these guys, like, everyone's just going to be playing like these guys in 10, 20 years. So why bother with all the, you know, with all the criticism and all this stuff, because it's great and it's going to be great.
They already are. I hear the young people coming out of school now, say 2021, that they've, you know, they've attached themselves to that sound a little bit. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
I think it's the most interesting. I mean, you know, I speak to Simon a fair bit and he's like, oh, you know, I'm a pop piano player. Like, I think they think of themselves as pop in a way. I mean, it is popular. And he's a great rapper too, great lyricist. So, you know, he's very musical guy, Perrin. And then he's practicing the drums. I'm like, oh, he plays drums as well. He's like, oh, yeah, I'm just, you know. He's practicing. He was woodshedding. He was practicing I'm going to be a great drummer vibes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He had poker nights every Monday night. Uh-huh. We're all playing. He's practicing. Occasionally he'd come to the board and lose quick 20 and then go back to the practicing, you know?
Are you able to do that still? Separate it?
What's that?
Well, playing. I know a lot of jazzers that don't have a social life. I don't think you suffer from that though, because you're personable. And I think, I don't know if you found this. Well, I find that you're easier to talk to than most people. The first time I met you, you already had a vibe. I know that a lot of jazzers are very introspective, even outside of their music, and it can be a little bit of a situation, right? And I got a lot of them, and it was sometimes be really, how do I say this without being an a-hole? It's like,
just be an a-hole, man.
Just like lack of personality, man.
yeah. The thing with that.
No people skills, okay?
Yeah, I mean, they're grappling with that question with what we were talking about. I mean, are they original? Are they relevant? Are they, you know, are they practicing things from the past? In which case, I mean, you get the same from classical musicians. They're grappling with this question. Are they a historical monument, or are they pushing forward? And so they're wrestling with their own playing, and, you know, they don't, there's this thing where you really have to figure out what you're going to do with your day. You know, I mean, do you practice from 9 to 11? And quite often you just procrastinate and then you get to practice for about 5 and then, you know, it's, and then you're upset, you know, you're kind of, oh, I didn't get to practice. And then you go out to a jazz club and then you say hello to Darius and you're like, oh, hey, how you going? You know?
So they're just tortured souls, and I meet them at that point where they're shaming themselves. They're actually excited to see me but they've just shit all over themselves. They're disappointed in themselves and not me.
Yeah, the most happy jazz musicians are the one. Okay, first gigging, sociable. Also have a little bit of a schedule, like teaching or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean there are some greats that struggle a little bit socially, and I know a couple of them, and they're really great guys, girls. Once you meet them, but it's just.
Sometimes yeah. It's pulling teeth, brother. Like just getting a little bit of a, you know what it is? Candid banter, yeah. Right? Yeah. And it's important. Yeah. I think, you know, when I listen to all the, not all of them, like I'm sure Charlie Parker maybe would have been a little bit hard to talk to every now and then, but a lot of them can really kind of hold a show or talk to people outside of that. I find that the numbers are higher in jazz in particular, where, and it could be a generational thing too, but yeah. I know with some of the rock and rollers, a little bit more personable, but DJs, you can't shut them up, but that's for other reasons. But yeah, I think jazz is sometimes a very, very high numbers in the shyness.
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe there's something with the music. It's a very, it can be a very, heady music, a lot of thinking, a lot of, but you know, in a way, the best jazz, has always been just the expression, you know, not the thinking, just the expression. I'm sure when Miles did In a Silent Way, it wasn't really thinking.
Yeah.
Just then I was jamming with this drummer just before this podcast. And he says, oh, what do we do after this header just says F, you know, what do you do? And I'm like, just do it.
Sometimes I wake up with no dreams in my head. Where do they go when life is gone elsewhere? Where do they go? I don't know.
The only thing that was lacking there, the only thing that was lacking there was just a little bit of an English, a little bit of an English accent, I think. And then something, just a little bit, I don't know, just a little bit Sex Pistols, I think, was missing in that track.
Well, yeah, I just I didn't hear any Sex Pistols in that, but I hear more. Who's the fucking English band everyone listens to? A little bit.
Well, there was a Temper Trap that we were listening to a lot as a band. I don't know what they're doing now. They lived in London a lot, and actually, we worked with the same producer of them as them. The Temper Trap. I think his name was Russell. I forget his last name. Sorry, Russell. And then and Jan Skubiski. Well, he's done a lot of great things in Melbourne. He was producing that track. It's great, great, great mix. They were up for hours doing that mix. They were like 2 days without sleeping, those two guys. And you weren't allowed in the room if you were talking. Like, you just, do you want a tea, guys? Shut up for a second. We'll, you know.
So how long were you in the Melodics for? How did that, how was that birthed?
You know, it's, we really went for it. It was that, you know, you only get one or two shots of being in a real band, you know, a real pop band. You know, you're really going to do it. And if it works, then you're set. Look at Cats. They're set. They've got things, everything. Look at Hiatus. You only really get one or two because it's just a lot of work.
You know,
you're rehearsing 4-5 nights a week. But James Tuppall and I, we were at Monash jazz course. And so we got some other great musicians, Taco Sybil, Eric Budd, and we were auditioning for a bass player. And I was super weird in the audition, man. Like, I was scaring the fucking bass players. I was like, do this now. No, don't do it. You know, like, I was being all schizophrenic. I mean, this one guy we got ended up getting, Jamie Barlow. Oh, before that it was Alan Dinh, who I played with after the Melodics, actually.
Right.
Great bass player. But Jamie Barlow, great bass player, and he's just super quiet, chilled guy. And he's like, who the fuck is this guy on the keys? Scaring, you know, he's been pretty weird, you know.
Well, people wouldn't know the nuance of your weirdness, right?
Yeah, but it was super weird then. It was, you know, it was pre-therapy.
I remember you. You were a weird cat, but that's pre-therapy. Kind of what I liked about you.
Yeah, there's it's funny. It's therapy's funny.
Oh, because dude, I just came out of a year and a half of it, dude.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, you know, I mean, you want to get rid of the stuff that you know, doesn't really help you. But you also want to keep some of, I don't know, you, it's like, have you seen that movie Clockwork Orange? They try and get rid of all his faults, which are a lot, but then the whole movie is this debate about whether it's, you know, you're taking away everything now. He's just a vegetable on the couch. Like,
yeah,
you know.
Well, the people that I love have madness to them, you know, whether it be Charles Bukowski, Miles Davis, Charlie Parker. All the wildcats, man, the way that they were. I think that's what separates them. But as a person, right? You can't.
Yeah, I think you've got to be a good person as well. And I think, you know, so when you met me, maybe, you know, I was in this whole, oh, I'm going to be great. I am the great piano player, you know?
Yeah, you had bravado, like this, for sure.
Yeah, I had, you know, cockado, I guess you could say. It was just, I'm not proud of it. I'm not proud of the, like, I was either super depressed going out, you know, to the Evelyn or something, or I was like, oh, everyone, you know, how you doing, everyone? Like,
yeah.
But never that middle thing. So I think, yeah. But anyway, so we're getting this band together, and we're all, you know, young, like I said, crazy dudes. And, we had this more kind of hornsy kind of party band thing at the start, maybe referencing a bit of Cat Empire.
Sure.
Then we moved into this more, we slowly moved into this more rock, pop, synth
dancing
kind of thing.
Yeah.
Which was okay, but I was personally more interested in the creative side of it. Like, I wonder if I would, you know, would have maybe liked to be in the band like Hiatus, like, oh, here's E major 7 to this. Like, there's all this crazy stuff going on. We were playing a lot of 1-4-5-6 kind of stuff at the end there. But I don't regret anything of it. But like I said, and same with the drummer Tuddy, like, we were done. We were like, no, we've done our, you only have a few stabs. You know, you're a young guy. You only have a few stabs at being an original. Like, I can do it now solo, but I'm talking about band. Everyone equal. You're a band. And well, King you have Gizzard to, and the Lizard Wizard do a lot of great stuff.
You have to come up together, right? And I think, and this is another issue that I find with all the great bands is that they came up together. And yeah, you played with other people and jammed and did that stuff. But I think in order to be great, you have to be tight, and not just tight as in a band, but is in the togetherness of it and just living and breathing each other. And that's when you get into the fights and the madness and the greatness of it all. I think with session musos, they can do it because they're accomplished and they've been to Monash and things like that, but it only often gets to a particular tier, and then they'll do some avant-garde jazz at a jazz club, and that's how they experiment. But is in listenability and greatness, like a Hiatus, right? Is that it? In order to do that, you have to, like any kind of good rock band or jazz band, is that you have to live and breathe each other, because you've got to get past that first hurdle. Or, you know,
it's very important. A good example is Talking Heads. The bass player, the drummer, you can't replace any single one of those people in the band, musicians in the band. And, you know, this whole session musician. I like, you know, when you're a session musician, you've got to kind of be good at everything.
Yeah.
But when you're in a band, like a band, you are really good at what you do.
That's right. You have a forte which produces a sound.
Yeah.
Right? And you go,
yeah,
that's Hugh Blaine's playing, right? I know that sound. But the problem
that's
is...
That's what I love about these bands.
Yeah. That's what I love about them too. And that's what a particular, you know, even if it's a, it could be a rock band with a guitar and you hear a tone, you go, oh, that's his tone, right? And I think when you start spreading yourself all over the place, yes, it's great that you get to play with multiple people, but I don't think you ever really develop a sound.
Yeah. Yeah.
Arguably.
Completely agree. Yeah, I completely agree. Or at least you've got to kind of, you know, grapple with your own sound.
How you doing with that?
Yeah. Trying my best. I got this great little place. It's like I can be as loud as I want here in this room. It's like an old building that doesn't get used anymore, you know? And there's a drummer there, and there's a couple of this graphic design woodwork, you know, and I get to come in here every day and just write.
So play, this is outside of your home. Sober. This is a space, shared space. Yeah.
Yep. This is, well, it's not really a shared space. I mean, you know, the area outside of the room is shared, but this is my,
this is your
studio.
Room.
There's all these scores. So I might just come in here and just read through some Brahms or some Strauss, or I might get some singers. I love getting like an opera singer in.
Yeah.
You know, and we go through Strauss, like some real heavy stuff, and like they might be super great at opera, but I'm not like the best classical player, but it's just a, see, this is the thing with that, what you said before about the introverted jazz thing. It's like, you've got to play with people.
Yeah.
Like every day, every day there's got to be people coming in and playing. And so every day I have one or two guests or like a bass player or drummer who comes in and we play. And that's what I think people miss in COVID times as well, because you can practice all you want, but you're only going to be grappling with your own problems then. Whereas when you're really feeding off other people, it's like, I'm having much more fun talking to you right now than maybe just like practicing by myself. Like, I'm actually finding more about myself now talking to you than just sitting in a room.
Well, that's practicing. What it's all about, man. I think of people, especially when you're going back and you're being retrospective and you listen to something that you haven't listened to for 10 years, it gets you thinking. Whether you like it or not is irrelevant, right?
Yeah.
It's just going, fuck, I remember when I did that. And you lived in a completely different country and you weren't speaking, you know, the language that you're speaking now, and you know, and with the people that you were. And it's just, I think it's a really healthy thing. I often do. I was just before, because I got the times wrong, I wrote a book 15 years ago, right? It's 100,000 words. I never did anything with it, and I was supposed to. had a fundraiser for it and fucking did all that. And I'm only editing it now. And it's funny to see that voice. It's funny to, there's 100,000 words of a voice that feels like me, but also a stranger.
Yeah. That's what I like about, self-writing and you know, really getting into yourself, and in a way therapy as well, as you really, you're really finding, you know, you're really asking some tough questions. You know, are you, I mean, I think going back and looking, and COVID made me do that. That 18 months it is now, it's just such a huge amount of time. Like, everyone's so weary, and I think people are starting to go out and do stuff now. It's sort of opening up here again.
Yes, slowly here.
But it's made me look back, and it's, what's funny is the trivial things you hated about your previous work, you suddenly kind of like it. You like the shitness of some of it.
Yeah.
And I think that's where you need to be all the time. I went down to Italy last month and did a recording with a couple of Italian musicians in Puglia. It was really fun. We're mostly eating, but you know, a little bit of music.
Sure.
And we did the takes. And the drummer was like, you guys choose the takes, you know, you guys choose the takes, whatever. It's a drummer's project. Edigio Gentile. You know, great name. Gentle. You're gentle, bro. No, Gentile. No, gentle. No. But no, cool guy. I just said to him, dude, choose the tracks. You know, because we're all insecure douchebags. Like, yes. We're just going to be, oh, I stuffed up in that bit there and I stuffed up in this bit. But he, as being the drummer, he's not going to care too much about everyone's stuff-ups or whatever. He's just going to get this nice overall picture.
Yeah.
About what the best energy is and what the best take. And I think when I look back like 12 years ago, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, I listened to the stuff that I didn't like and I'm like, oh, actually, it was okay. It was just this energy. It was just this craziness. It was...
I agree, man. I've listened to stuff that I've done in the past, and I don't know, you know, I don't have any issue kind of listening back and going, oh, that was kind of cool, you know. As naff as some of the stuff that I did was, and some of it is doing like, you know, some super commercial jazz standards. I'm like, I fucking really like that.
Yeah, just own it. Do Quando. Do all this other stuff. He's a grumpy guy. But he teaches at the school at the conservatorium here in Den Haag, John Rocco. I'm just going to say it. He knows he's grumpy. He's just an American dude. He's been here for too long. He's been here 30 years. He's just grumpy. Anyway, the amazing, he says some amazing stuff, but he's like this kind of jazz guru, you know? And you know, he's got cigarette stains, white hair. He looks like the wizard, but he's a jazz wizard, alto sax, tenor sax guy. And he says, always, when you're in the class with him, you'll say, oh, I don't like, you know, I don't like post-1972 culture, whatever. You know, you say something, I'm not saying that that's what I said. You just say something.
He's like, 75 to 85.
Fuck you, man. You know, he's like, all music's good. All music's good. Like, I'll go and listen to Maria Callas. And then I'll go and listen to this. All music's good. Fuck you, man, for saying that. It's true. You know, some of these young impressionable dudes and you know, older dudes as well, we've got to, as musicians, we've got to rise above all this bullshit about, oh, that wasn't as good as that, and this is better, and this is all like.
Yeah, cataloging from best to worst, right? Yeah, fuck that.
It's all good.
Man,
everything, B-side, A-side, C-side.
Yeah,
it's all good.
It's making someone happy, and this is the thing, you know. When I, you know, I've put bands together before, and when I was doing my original thing, was, you know, sometimes I'd feel like they're just looking at the clock. I'm like, guys, we just fucking started. Oh, I gotta be out of here in half an hour. I was like, I booked you guys five people. It's hard to get. You're telling me this now, and then you know, and dude, it was pop music, but in a kind of Motown-esque kind of Michael Franksy jazzy type way. You know, I was putting the diminished sevens in there. There was a couple of augmented situations, right? So there's some tasty treats in there, dude. And I just felt like give into it, you know. And I think it's good, and I'm pretty objective with my stuff, and I know when I don't like something. And it was just funny that exactly. It's like, you guys can do the jazz thing, and there's, you know, when you go to the club, and that's all good, and I love that, you know. And I listen to deep jazz and all that kind of stuff. It's fine. But open your hearts to this stuff too, because it's a beautiful situation. It's a beautiful thing. And it's original music. We are being original pioneers right now. Embrace that, right? Instead of fucking just playing something that's 50 years old like that dude, but you flowered it a little more, right?
Yeah. I think what you're trying to say is, you know, be open. Yeah. Be open. I mean, there's poppy guys that aren't open to the past as well. You know, I'm saying that there's there's that real openness, and the best musicians I've ever met have been the ones that are open, and that aren't just focusing on a period or a style or a genre or anything like that.
Yeah. So where do you find it now in regards to, like, because the way that you say it feels like it's in the past a little bit, like. Maybe you're like, hey, listen, man, Leonard Cohen didn't fucking do anything till it was, I don't know, like 42, 43, right?
This is what
I keep telling myself, right? I look at, I Google who became famous after 40? And I'm like, Gene Kelly did Singing in the Rain and did that dance number. He had the fever and he was 41.
I'm trying to work on my patience a little bit, because the opportunities aren't as much as they were pre-COVID.
Mm.
You know, I was going to play with all these Japanese guys in Japan.
Yeah.
And, I had literally 3 weeks of gigs booked, big, good stuff, good collaborations. That was in March. So we had to cancel. That was March last year. And, you know, since then I haven't really been doing too much collaboration. Yeah, some online stuff that I've sort of sent through. But I'm just working on my own sort of solo stuff.
What's the vibe? Can you talk about it, or are you beating yourself up? I look at your face and I'm like, there's a little bit of pain there when you talk about it.
Well, we recorded in November.
Yeah.
And I love the tunes. I think the tunes are great. It's not sort of much a jazz. It's more like rock jazz. It's more progressive. It's chords. There's like production elements.
Can you give me a reference like what it might be like? I know musicians don't like doing that, but
a little bit. Like there's Aaron Parks. Little Big is this kind of this new jazz style that's come out. It's a little bit like Hiatus, but without the singing. You know, it's a little bit like. It's rock. There's melodies, guitar. It's a little bit more suitable for festivals. That's what I'm going for.
Yep.
Trying to go to North Sea and all this sort of stuff, like big stages. Kind of. I'm trying to get to big stages eventually.
You're still fighting a good fight, man.
Yeah, of course. But I'm not doing any hard work until this thing's over, because I know people who've done like 3 or 4 cancellations of things, and they're just doing it and doing it. I want to work on the things that I can control, and that's my art, that's my music,
and that's
all I can control.
And have you written? When you say you've written it,
It's been recorded. It's been recorded, and I've just been sort of.
And it's an album, not an EP.
It's an album. Yeah, it's a full length album. We call out the band Slowland because we're in the lowlands here, and the Slowland, and this kind of. Feels like in the last year nothing sort of happened, so I don't know. I just thought Slowland, just call it the project that. I think it's simple, but it's, if you listen to the music, you might associate with it's not slow music. It's just like what's been happening in the world is kind of slow, but it's fast, and I don't know. I feel like it sums it up pretty well. So we had the mixing hasn't been sort of finished because. The producer wanted to mix it, but it sort of, he ran out of time. So it went into this kind of post-production jigsaw of trying to get the mixing done. And then the design's already been done. I got a friend here who runs a cafe great guy, you know, great cook. He's and a great designer as well. He's done all the fonts, and there's a font guy too, actually, Rutherford from England. He does all our fonts and stuff. So there's all the design stuff is actually done. It just needs to be mixed. So I'm getting a friend of mine to mix it here for low. This is a problem at the moment with music and the fact that there's not that many live gigs. It's like, do I invest €5,000 on a mix? I'm actually getting a student friend of mine who's happy to do it for relatively cheap. He's not doing Melbourne industry standard rates, which I was trying to get some of these guys to do it, and one, they're too busy with other stuff, and one, it's not that they're too expensive, they deserve everything that they get. It's just I just can't justify the cost of the high mixing costs, you know.
That's what I was, because I'm working with a Mexican guy. He plays guitar and all that kind of jazz, and we've been not all that kind of jazz, more kind of rock based stuff. But you know, I was speaking to Aaron, my brother, and they're recording in Sing Sing at the moment. The they got that retro thing going. What's it called, with Luke Hodgson and what's the thing?
Oh,
called?
Wow, he's doing that with
you know, with like 13 different players, and they do the
Graham Poxon on the drums.
Yeah, what's it called, man?
Tamil Rajan sort of doing the production and stuff as well. Or
I'm not sure who's doing it, but they're doing it. Sounds great. They're gonna you know, Jade McRae's singing on it. She's in America at the moment.
Yeah,
but cool. Mondo Freaks, man. I don't know if you've ever seen the Mondo Freak thing, but it's like massive. Like all the creme de la creme of musicians that you would have playing with and known have all come together, and they would do this thing where they weren't touring because Aaron was with doing Meg Mac with Fisher and Hodgson, Luke Fisher and Hodgson.
Yeah, Luke's great.
Oh, dude.
Hodgson's great. They're best. I think they used to live together, those two.
They did, yeah. Yeah.
Amazing combo. But, you know, you can't get a better rhythm section than that. They both live together.
I know, man. I know. But, I got them to do one of my a thing I did. But, he was like, why are you recording it here? I'm like, he goes, you know, just get someone from it doesn't need that for the sound that you're doing. I'm like, you know what? You're right. I'm just going to get people that are just starting out. And I have a whole bunch of people, because the guests that have come onto the show that show a lot of promise, and sonically I like what they've come up with. But yeah, it doesn't necessarily always have to be like that. I got Ben Edgar to do the album last time, I think, maybe, you know, the guitarist for
he's great,
Gautier, and everyone, a couple of times, Angus and Joya, and all that stuff. He was great, man. He was a really good energy. He kind of calms a person like me down, you know. He lights all that shit, and it I come in hot. Sometimes I come in too hot.
So where do they record it? Do they record it on that new studio that they've got on in Richmond? What do they call it?
Yeah.
There's this new kind of studio that they kind of run themselves.
I don't know. I don't know where it is or whatever, but I was inquiring about it because they're about to record. They've written all the tracks. Oh, they've actually started recording, but I'm not sure where it is. But yeah, man, sometimes you can just, I think about some
Deluxe. I think they call it Deluxe.
Probably.
I think they kind of, there's like four of them that kind of run it and stuff. I think that's where they do it. But going back to that Sing Sing thing, it's a real shame, because when there used to be a budget for music, when you could sell CDs and stuff like that, because now Spotify takes 0.00006 of every song or something. It's ridiculous.
It's 0.00348.
Oh, that's generous. Yeah, that's okay then. No.
So I did the math yesterday. You know, I was like, how much do I need to make? If I get 10 million streams, then I get $34,000. That's what I worked out.
Yeah, I guess it's okay. I mean, he's really sitting on a gold mine, because, you know, Spotify is going well, and everyone listens to it, and it's great. It is a great platform. It's a great way to listen to music. It's just, wouldn't it be great if some of that, he scored a profit of $3 billion, or he's like one of the richest guys in the world now. You know, he's 4, 5, 6, 7 billion guy. You know, 33. Yeah, it might be 33 billion. I can't remember the figures, but
everyone's just got them. You can't beat them. Join them attitude, because at the end of the day, you can fucking push CDs, and you know, and I got all this fucking shit pressed for nothing. No one listens to this stuff anymore, right? Yeah, so you got to have it streamed, and it is a rip. You know, I think They could definitely,
I think this is how sad Spotify is. I think YouTube is maybe a better ratio than Spotify. I think that's how sad Spotify is, that YouTube is actually better. Apple's better.
Apple pays double.
Apple pays double. Yeah, amazing. So, you know, maybe if everyone – yeah, but not everyone can boycott those kind of things. But I wanted to go back to the artistic side of things.
Go for it.
I used to love going to Sing Sing when it was in its old place on Gordon Street. Mm. And you used to work with the engineers that really were, you know, well-studied engineers, Adam Rhodes, Ross Cockle. And these guys, I mean, the new ones who are coming up are great too. But there used to be this, you walked in and you felt like you were in a place, a church in a way, you know, a church of music.
Yeah.
It was just beautiful pianos, beautiful equipment everywhere. I mean, there was always this great camaraderie in the main hall there as well, like table tennis. I was playing table tennis with John Legend's backing singers, right. You know. And then there was there's a moment there where Kanye West was doing some stuff. Mm. A friend of mine, Gideon Priest, was doing keys for Kanye West on a couple of tracks.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, there was this, yeah, I mean, I won't, it was royalty. There was all these great stories. There was, you know, Jet would be in there and then we'd have like we'd just be having croissants with Jet. And then Empire of the Sun guy and his sister was in there once. What's her name? Katie Steele.
Yeah, it had,
you know,
that.
And we were just, yes. Oh, it had this yes. You know, it was the most fun thing ever. And then you go in and do some vocal tracks. I miss the art of it. I miss the art of that place. And of course, there's these studios as well. There's always
going to be
new studios.
What's the vibe there? What's in the way of the caliber of the musician? Is it as thick? You know, for the population of Melbourne, I don't know how we get so many, and especially in jazz as well. There just seem to be so many good players come out of here, including yourself. And is there a vibe there? Is there a little bit of a movement, or is it something that you're bringing to the table? What's the dealio, Emilio?
Well, before I moved to Europe, you know, I was like, oh, more opportunity. But Den Haag is only 500,000, Amsterdam 800,000, Rotterdam 800,000. Mm. And so there's these cities Rotterdam's only 15 kilometers away, but it's a world away. Like not many people go between the cities. And right. So we're talking about the Den Haag scene, we're talking about the Rotterdam scene. And so what Melbourne has is it's got a 4,500,000 people scene.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, so everyone's in this one place. So if you're in Amsterdam, you play with the Amsterdam players. If you're in Den Haag, you play with the Den Haag players. And so the scene is good. A lot of it comes from the conservatorium. Mm. But there's great players everywhere. And I've actually just started playing with some players who there's a singer from Amsterdam who I play with, Noah Lauren, and she works with this same producer that I worked with on my solo record. That's I'm looking forward to when it gets mixed. But so there's great musicians. Who am I trying to say? That play with the Metropole Orchestra.
Mm.
It's funny, Vince Mendoza is the famous conductor who conducts that Metropole. He worked Bjork. I went and saw in Amsterdam on last Tuesday, Lala Hathaway with right. the Metropole Orchestra. And there's a huge caliber of musicians here. And the Metropole Orchestra is actually one of the best pop orchestras in the world. Like, everyone wants to work with these guys because they have this unbelievable ability of being able to mix the strings with the loud horns and the bass and the electric bass and the drums, which is really hard to do.
Fuck yeah.
I went and saw this gig and the drummer's playing electric bass, keys, strings, and the whole sound was perfect. And that's like one of the hardest things to do.
Yeah.
Is to get the strings to be at this level of the drums. So I think I'm glad to be here, and there's some great opportunities that are coming up.
Are you planning to stay there?
Yeah, it's a good question. I want to spend a little bit of time each year in both places, and see where that takes me. But the COVID thing has really restricted that. So what would have happened if I went to Japan was I would have spent another 2 months in Australia. and played with Deborah Conway. I play with Harry, you know, I play with Lockie Mitchell, who plays with the Hiatus guys in this thing called Uncomfortable Science, Jazz Party. I did some backing vocals and keys with Jazz Party. And so I would have done a whole heap of stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so my ideal thing is, I don't think I will move back. I think I'll spend like 5 months, 6 months in Australia and 5-6 months in everywhere else.
It's funny you mentioned Japan, and for some reason I was fascinating us two just in a smoky bar doing the thing, you know what I mean? But original things, and I was like, I could see me and Hugh just fucking making a mess of it there.
Let's do something, man. I'll accompany you, a couple of BVs. Let's go on a little duo tour. My uncle was a Japanese pop singer, and I've been planning. He was huge in the 80s, Yoshito Mashita.
Right.
And he's married to my uncle. I'm not married to my uncle. No, he is my uncle. He's married to my auntie, and they live in Brunswick. And he used to be huge, like big, massive. Big like Spinal songs. Tap.
Huge in Japan. Guys, yeah. We're huge in Japan.
Well, he's Japanese, so yeah, no, he's going to be huge in Japan first, you know. It's like in Melbourne. You've got to be huge in Melbourne first maybe before you go anywhere else. I don't know. That's another conversation. But I've been trying to get him to do a tour, and I'll like be the musical director.
Yeah.
Then everyone comes to these shows. We do all the old songs. I work with the Japanese musicians.
Yeah, man.
I've been trying to get this guy out of retirement. He's been in retirement for 30 years.
Jesus. I reckon we could do something. Yeah.
Let's do something. I mean, you know, there's a lot of – I've been fantasizing so much about the possibilities of all this stuff.
Oh, man. Well, if I come up there, maybe we can do something together. Give me a chance to – an excuse to travel to Europe. Would you have me?
Come to Europe. Of course I would have you. I mean, there's even we've got a spare room in the house, but there's even like you can just stay in the studio.
Yeah,
you know, and just camp out here. Like it's a beautiful, beautiful space. And let's just make music all day. And
I'd love that, dude.
Yeah.
I would love that. Let's do it. Fuck it. Let's
take you to some of my favorite eateries.
Oh, man. And that's my wife's cooking a lamb roast at the moment.
Guys are cooking so good. Like you're making these steaks the other day.
I did the chicken adobo.
Filipino chicken.
Yeah, man. Yeah. She's doing fennel encrusted lamb roast. So when I went out for that cigarette when we're doing sound check, I was like, what's that?
Man. Oh, man. I got my wife's eggplant parmigiana coming up.
Yes.
For lunch right now. So. Yes.
All right.
I'm actually getting hungry now. Suddenly I'm getting hungry. But I'm also inspired, you know, from talking to you.
Thanks, brother.
Vladimir Putin is a very lonely man. He tries to write a lullaby, instead he writes a rag. He tries to give a party and the people don't attend. Vladimir Putin will be here until the end. Desperately he tries to own everything that he can't control. He hates his life, mistakes he's made. Long ago he was a child at play. Vladimir Putin is a very tries to write a lullaby, instead he writes a rag.